Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Right now, we're pleased to welcome Howard Beck, who's a senior NBA writer for Sports Illustrated. And Howard, let's start with this Warriors loss to the Blazers, that huge shot, the step back three by Dame. The Warriors are hovering right above 500, but I'm wondering, is this as good as they can play without any added personnel? Is this who the Warriors are in 21?
I have felt from the beginning that the Warriors were kind of a fringe playoff team. And from the moment they lost Klay Thompson before the season, knowing they would play the whole season without him, knowing that Steph Curry, as great as he is, was not going to have a lot of offensive firepower around him or even a lot of familiarity around him because there's so many new pieces or guys that he'd barely played with, like Wiggins, who he barely overlapped with last year, that there just wasn't going to be enough of the old Warriors to rely on. And, you know, that's where they are. You know, they're an up and down team. They're a team that I think, to their credit, has been very competitive, has, you know, hovered around or over 500 for much of the season. They're clearly in contention for a top eight spot, but wouldn't surprise me if they end up in the play-in slots, you know, the ninth and tenth area. Look, Curry's playing like an MVP again. He can't win MVP as long as they're that far down in the standings, in my mind, but he will keep them competitive, and he will make, you know, look, at a bare minimum, he's made them fun again. They're must-see TV every time they play, but, you know, there's just not enough talent or enough experience there for them to be much more than a fringe playoff team.
You don't see as many missed layups in the final couple minutes, typically from the Warriors, as you do, especially with Steph. But yes, Portland comes away with that win, a big three by Damian Lillard. The Utah Jazz are at the top of the Western Conference, and while they've dropped a couple games in a row, you talk about fun to watch. That's another team that I've really enjoyed watching so far this season. What impresses you about the Jazz?
I think, you know, tonight's loss to Philly notwithstanding, and obviously the Jazz pretty bitter coming out of that one about the officiating and then the loss in overtime and some calls that they felt were questionable. The Jazz overall, I think, you know, there's two things going on there. They've always been elite defensively, and you knew that was going to make them at minimum a very solid playoff team. But what's, I think, elevated them from middle of the pack in the Western Conference to best record in the entire NBA is in year two of Mike Conley. Conley is now healthy and fitting in real well, comfortable, but also, you know, though they didn't add major personnel and Donovan Mitchell is still their only real elite offensive player. That first unit especially just moves the ball really well. And so it makes defenses work really hard to keep up with all the ball pinging around and players moving around. And it makes, it manufactures better shots for them. And they shoot a ton of threes. I think they're leading the league in three-point shooting. And they just play really well together. And, of course, defensively, they're on a string. Mm-hmm. So they get the most out of what they have. They do not have the best talent necessarily in the league, but they're playing at the highest level right now.
Are they better than they were in the bubble? Do you feel like they are improving as a unit, as a group?
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And some of that is, you know, they also, you know, they got Bojan Bogdanovic back. He did not make the bubble because of wrist surgery last year. And so he's back. As I say with Conley, you know, Mike Conley had spent his entire career in Memphis playing a certain way and with a familiar environment and familiar personnel around him. And he and Marc Gasol had been, you know, tag team partners for years. And year one in Utah, I think it was just a big adjustment to Quinn Snyder's system, to new environment, to sharing offensive playmaking duties and ball handling duties with Donovan Mitchell, and he was banged up. And, you know, having a healthy version of Mike Conley plus Bojan Bogdanović back, I think has made a lot of difference for them.
Mm. So they lose the Sixers in overtime, and Joel Embiid has another monster night. The Sixers barely keeping ahead of the Nets atop the Eastern Conference. What's the biggest difference that you've seen in the Sixers under Doc Rivers as opposed to where they were with Brett Brown when they made the change?
Well, I mean, it's a couple things that I don't even think are, you know, really about the coaching. One is that when Daryl Morey came in, he immediately flipped Al Horford and Josh Richardson for two shooters in Seth Curry and Danny Green. And the Sixers in recent years were at their best when they had just a ton of three-point shooting around Simmons and Embiid. And they kind of had lost that with the group that they had put together. And so just functionally, they're better off. And then Joel Embiid, after years of being, you know, a little up and down, I mean, dominant, but not necessarily consistent, you know, all the talent in the world, but questions about his work ethic or his conditioning. He came in phenomenal shape. Mm. He's been playing out of this world. Ben Simmons lately is really locked in again. And so I just think that they're firing on all cylinders in a way that they hadn't the last season or two. And they're healthy. You know, Simmons and Embiid, every year one of them, it seems like, and sometimes both, miss a large span of time. And this year they've been pretty solid overall health-wise. And so that makes a big difference, too. And you know, and Doc has a great touch. And, it's not to say that he's not part of this as well. Maybe they did just need a new voice and a different, different approach. But I think a lot of this is just simply more functional lineup, more three-point shooting, Joel Embiid coming in as committed as ever.
40 points in 40 minutes for him in what was the overtime victory against the Jazz. We're spending a few minutes with Howard Beck, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. So James Harden with his new love back in the home of his old love. And the Houston Rockets very generous with a tribute video during that game. But they come away with the victory. At what point does Harden become part of the MVP conversation?
Depends on how you view MVP and also whether the conversation means anywhere on the ballot or top of the ballot. So when you ask MVP conversation, where are you are you saying, can he be the MVP or is he just on the ballot?
No, at what point is he considered a viable candidate for this award?
He won't be. You can't force your way off of a team and do it the way that he did in season, skipping out on training camp, you know, going off and you know, being filmed at clubs amid a pandemic, and then finally showing up and being out of shape and sleepwalking through however many weeks of the season before he finally got traded. It's kind of disqualifying, frankly. You know, MVP is a high, high honor. And I think it doesn't mean you have to be above reproach on all counts, but that's a really rough way to start a season. And the entire season counts for MVP. It's not most valuable player of the, you know, last whatever, where it's a 72-game season. So it's not just about the 50-something games he'll play for the Nets. It's the whole season. And so all those games that he was kind of just tanking it with the Rockets, those count too. The other problem is that at some point Kevin Durant's going to start playing again, and James Harden won't even be the best player on his own team. So I don't think he's truly in the MVP discussion, though he could be on the ballot somewhere in one of those five slots. But the top of the ballot, you know, to me, that's still, you know, Joel Embiid, LeBron James, those guys are leading the discussion right now. Others will, you know, come and go within that discussion. I think it'll evolve as it always does, but that's the way I see it right now.
I am so happy to hear you say that, because it feels like over the last week, maybe week and a half, that all has been forgotten and forgiven, and yet I still have a bad taste when I watch him play. And again, I thought the Rockets took the high road, but I don't think his teammates or his new coach, or I guess the guy who was his coach in Houston, have forgotten how ugly that was at the beginning of the year.
No, and look, it's because people get bored. Sports media gets bored with the same conversations. And so after the LeBron James versus Joel Embiid debate for MVP at the quarter season mark and the third of the season mark, and the Nets playing so well without Durant and Harden. You know, look, all credit due to Harden. He is playing at an MVP level. Like, that's clear. Let's not be, let's not diminish that at all. It's not that he's not playing at an MVP level in terms of both winning and the way he's played, the way he's lifted up this team. And I think, to his credit, he has shown during his time with the Nets so far that he can do all the things that some of us weren't sure he could do, reining his own game in, being more playmaker. He's still scoring a lot, but his usage rate is way down. And that's all to his credit. And if he had started the season with the Nets on day one, even if he had forced his way out of Houston, that's fine. You guys force their way out all the time. But if he had started with the Nets on day one and been this guy from day one, maybe we'd be talking about him as a viable MVP candidate, even with Durant on his team. But the first month of the season was this just ugly, just messy situation that he created, and you can't dismiss that.
All right, Howard, let's move on. The Eastern Conference, after you get down to about the fourth spot, is completely mangled. It's thick around the middle. Seven teams right now with either 17 or 18 losses. I go cross-eyed trying to keep all these records straight because they're so identical through the middle of the East. It's pretty insane. What do you make of the Eastern Conference right now?
It's, you know, it's a mess, most of it. It's just a sea of mediocrity for the most part. The Sixers and the Nets and the Bucks are elite teams. They're really, really good. And I think the Celtics can still get there. And I think the Celtics miss Marcus Smart more than most people realize. And I think when he's back, the Celtics will be fine. And maybe it's a four-team race at the top. But after that, you know, the Knicks are in fifth at 18-18. And then you've got the Raptors and Heat, who should both be ahead of the Knicks.
Right.
And ultimately will be. Those are teams that both started off kind of slow. Especially for the Heat, you know, they dealt with COVID issues, they dealt with injuries. They're whole again. They're winning, you know, at a much better clip now. So eventually, the Raptors and the Heat will be back in the mix there. But I don't know that either of those teams. I don't want to dismiss the Heat. They are the defending Eastern Conference champs, but it feels like the top echelon of the Sixers, Nets, and Bucks is kind of, you know, separate into itself. So, we'll see, but it is. It's a sea of mediocrity. I will say mediocre, but at least interesting, right? Like, the Hornets are two games below 500, but they're really fun to watch, and LaMelo Ball is really fun to watch. And the Knicks are a 500 team, but they've been fun to watch so far this season. And, you know, the Pacers are interesting, and I think that's another team that has you know, backslid a little, but will find itself. And the Hawks made a coaching change, and at their best, they're really interesting. So, you know, it's not a completely lost cause, but the East, per usual, is much weaker than the West.
Mm. So thinking about those teams that are kind of just below the top eight, neither the East or the West, as you mentioned, there's some good stories. The Chicago Bulls, they've been down for so long, and they are fun to watch as well. They're very scrappy, and they've got a couple of stars in the making. And then the Pelicans in the West, who, yes, are five games below 500. But wowzers, Zion, he's turning heads the way that he did when he was initially at Duke. What have you seen from him in the first half of this season?
I mean, he's been phenomenal. And you know, there's so much focus on his lack of defense. And yes, that needs to improve. Clearly, there's no question about that. But, you know, Zion has been absolutely the wrecking ball that everybody thought he would be. And that we saw glimpses of, you know, for his short rookie season. He's still basically a rookie, by the way. Like, he still doesn't have 82 games under his belt.
Right.
So, as we're all, you know, hyperventilating and hyper-evaluating him, I think, you know, give him some room to still kind of find himself and figure out the best way to use his talents and to figure out NBA defense and all that. He's still a virtual rookie based on games played.
Howard, I know that LeBron James spends thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars on his conditioning, and obviously in incredible shape. He's the Tom Brady of the NBA. Probably gets hit a lot more, too, than Brady does. But should he be taking any kind of rest? He was off tonight. Should he be working in a little more of the load management?
He's never been a load management guy. And I think he took great pride in the fact that he hadn't, up until tonight, missed a single game this season. And he's played really strongly throughout. It's been tough the last couple of weeks without Anthony Davis, of course, and for a little bit without Dennis Schroeder. And I think that, you know, more than games played or minutes played, because his minutes are, I think, you know, he's playing like 34 and a half minutes. It's not a huge load overall. He did have a string, you know, the Lakers had a string of overtime games, and LeBron played 40 minutes in each of those. And so that, I think, raised some alarm bells for people who were worried about his longevity. But yeah, look, 18 years in, 36 years old, playing at a level that we've rarely, if ever, seen of a guy at that age and with that many years in the league, it's incredible, but you do have to be cautious. We are in an age of sports science. They do have tracking devices or the tracking cameras, and they have the biometrics devices they can put on them during practice. There's a lot of ways to measure to monitor, and I'm sure the Lakers are doing their best to make sure that they don't put him in a fatigued state where he's more subject or vulnerable to injury. You know, you can be cautious, but sometimes freak accidents just happen. You know, look, how many times we see a guy just step on a guy's foot as he comes down and, you know, twist an ankle and is out for a couple weeks. LeBron has been incredibly durable, but sometimes it's just a freak accident is all it takes. So you do your best to monitor him and to measure it out. I'm sure they will continue to do that. And when they come out of the All-Star break, if they've got Anthony Davis back, you know, they won't need to lean on LeBron, you know, game in, game out as much.
Without him, the Lakers fall to the Kings on Wednesday night. All right, before I let you go, LeBron certainly outspoken, at least initially, about the All-Star game. We've heard other guys say that they don't think it's necessary. They'll play, of course, if they're required to, but it's not something they want to do. Why is the league so committed to having this All-Star game?
Money, obviously. You know, they've got a you know, massive, very lucrative contract with Turner Sports, who carry all of All-Star Weekend. You can bet that Turner Sports badly wanted this to be staged still, because they're selling ads and other things to generate revenue. And if the NBA opted out of it, then they'd have to make it up to Turner at some point. And it's, when we say the NBA, that's not the league office and the 30 owners. That's everybody. That's the players too, because the players and owners split basketball related income, or what we call BRI, 50-50. So whatever they make from All-Star Weekend, which as I understand it is in the tens of millions, that goes to the players too. It's not, and it's not just the bonuses that the All-Stars make. It's all 450 players are getting some piece of that as part of their paychecks, because that's where their paychecks come from basketball related income. So there's the commitment to the TV partner. There is the fact that all the owners and players still want to make that money. There's the fact that this is a tentpole event for the NBA and a big fan engagement event. And so for all those reasons, they're going to do it. And, you know, look, it is curtailed. It's not multiple days and parties and events and everything else. It is 24 hours. Essentially, they get in, they spend the night, they play the game, they have the dunk contest and the shoot and the 3-point shootout. And then everybody goes and they're doing it on private planes, and everybody is, you know, ordered to stay at the hotel when they're not going to the arena. So to the extent that you can do this safely, just like all the other games they've been playing, that's what they'll do.
All right. You can find Howard on Twitter at Howard Beck, now with Sports Illustrated as a senior writer and also co-host of the Crossover Pod. It's great to catch up with you when we can. Howard, thanks so much.
Always a pleasure, Amy. Thanks for having me.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.